Individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Nobles Insights panel on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's panel is ICD-10, Risk or Opportunity, and we'll focus on the mandatory new diagnosis and procedure coding system that must be implemented by October 1st, 2013. Here's your host, Robert J. Clareman.
Well, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the ICD-10 Risk or Opportunity panel discussion that we're having this morning. Thank you for being here. My name is Bob Clareman. I'm a vice president here at Nobles, and I will be your moderator. I'm going to introduce the panel in just a moment. We are holding this panel discussion in a very special facility here at Nobles. It's called the Nobles Innovation and Collaboration Center. And we set this up for reasons that I think will become very apparent today, and that is to get smart people with a lot of knowledge together, create an environment where they can collaborate and come up with innovative ideas to create solutions to very complex problems. And I think most of you here know, and if you don't, you'll discover by the end of this panel session that this is a very complex problem that we're going to work on today. So let's see if we can get some breakthroughs through the collaboration and discussion. I'd like to get us started by reading you a quotation. It's about medical diagnosis coding. So let me just read this to you. The advantages of a uniform statistical nomenclature, however imperfect, are so obvious that it is surprising no attention has been paid to its enforcement. The nomenclature is of such importance in medicine as weights and measures in the physical sciences and should be settled without delay. So when do you think somebody made that quotation? Just recently, a regulator or a healthcare expert or maybe a Hill staffer? Well, some of you may know, but this is actually a quotation from a gentleman named William Farr in the middle 1800s. And he was a healthcare statistician, and he was commenting on the need to update a diagnosis coding system that was developed a century earlier, so in the 1700s. So this whole issue of how we deal with medical coding and how we create the language of healthcare is at least 300 years older, and probably older than that. More recently, we have looked at how the industry feels about this issue. Now, we all know that by October 2013, October 1st to be specific, the healthcare industry must transition to the International Classification of Diseases, or ICD-10 set of codes, the 10th edition, from the ICD-9 code set. In conjunction, the HIPAA 5010 electronic data interchange standard is mandated by January 12, 2012. So we are 2 or 3 years out from this transition. We at Nobles just recently in February of this year surveyed through our insights panel healthcare executives and probed about their perspective on the ICD-10 transition. The results were very revealing, and I think they provide a good entree to our discussion today. More than half of the executives feel their organization is not adequately knowledgeable about ICD-10 and the HIPAA 5010 requirements and implementation. Not adequately knowledgeable. They didn't say they were ready. It was about knowledge. The same respondents felt the time to bring organizational focus to the effort is now. So let's see if we can help bring some knowledge and some focus to the subject. I'd like to introduce our panelists at this time, working from left to right. We have Sonia Racki. Sonia is with National Government Services, and she does provider outreach and education lead. We have Todd Kautz. Todd is with Nobles, and Todd is a manager who's responsible for our ICD-10 programs and works in our health innovation area. Welcome, Todd. We have Marcia Inslee. Marcia is Deputy Director of the Office of Health Data and Informatics at the VHA, the VA Office of Health Information. Welcome, Marcia. And Jacqueline Gibbons. Jacqueline is with Northern Virginia Community College And Jacqueline is an assistant dean in health information management and clinical data coding. And she's an ICD-10 trainer. So she brings a training perspective. Thank you for coming, Jacqueline. So let me start by just setting the context and ask each of you to comment on how you see, from your perspective, the ICD-10 challenge and the transition that we're facing. Todd, maybe since you've been working on this for a year or two, you could start us off.
When I think about ICD-10, I think Bob's quote is very applicable here. We're not quite 100 years behind with ICD-9, but we're 30 years behind. You know, ICD-9 has been around for about 30 years, and it only reflects medical science as of 30 years ago. And so when I think of that, I really think about the retail industry. We can imagine if we were Best Buy and we had a product catalog from 30 years ago, you know, how in the world would we capture the fact that we want to sell an iPhone or a modern technology? It would be very difficult to do that and to build it into our pricing systems. Well, ICD-9 codes are very similar. It's basically an inventory of all the diagnosis that can happen to the human body and all the procedures, what we can do to correct those problems. And that coding system is the basis for health plans. It's the basis for coverage policy. It's the basis for payment. And so we're basing critical functions within the healthcare industry on this coding system that's over 3 decades old and is not in sync with current medical technology. So what HHS has done is they've required the entire industry to move to ICD-10 in 2013 so that all organizations can use a more accurate system for capturing diagnosis and procedure. And when we do this, we'll be able to know with more clarity and more accuracy what actually happened at the point of care, which will enable better payment, better decision-making, and ultimately better outcomes for patients.
Marcia, the VA has an automated patient record system and is sort of been a leader in that area. Is that mean that you're all set for ICD-10 conversion? You can relax for the next 3 years?
I think it gives us a blessing and a curse at the same time. We have an electronic health record system that we've built in-house. So the good news, bad news scenario is that we are also responsible for updating that. When we are not dependent on a vendor or someone else. We may have a few cases where commercial products were purchased to add on, but for the majority of things, we have over 50 applications we already know that must be changed and upgraded to make us successful. Our system has been built over the course of over 30 years now, and we have a collection of data, billions of vital signs as just one example. So we have a lot to deal with in terms of our historical data and the nature. Our applications are heavily integrated. They work as a whole, and our computerized patient record system is the umbrella that kind of brings them all together to the clinicians. ICD-9 codes are used by clinicians to enter encounter form information, problem list information, et cetera. They're used for billing, obviously. They're used for all of our electronic decision support. For example, our clinical reminders are driven off of our ICD codes. And downstream, we have a huge analytical set of processes that take that data and deal with it based on ICD-9 coding. So we're not just changing in one place. We have a huge trickle-down impact throughout our entire system.
Mm-hmm. Sonia, you work with a lot of providers in the community across the whole spectrum. Are they ready? Are they sort of aware that this is an issue hitting them?
I think on the whole, no, they are not. It is much easier for the large facilities, the large group hospitals, or the multi-specialty practice groups to address this because they are understanding of the impact that ICD-10 is going to have. I think Todd's example of a retailer was a really, really good analogy. Healthcare with ARA and high tech and electronic health records, even back to HIPAA with the Medicare Modernization Act, every bit of it is pushing towards value-based purchasing to a pay-for-performance scale. Large groups are able to make those changes because they have the cash flow. They have the resources available to them. When you get into the small or the rural or the independent practitioners, I don't think they understand the impact that this is going to have. Many providers that we work with still do not submit electronic claims. They're still submitting paper claims. The EHR requirement or incentives, excuse me, the EHR incentives are unknown, completely foreign to them. The idea of submitting an electronic health record is a dramatic change that they do not even want to contemplate at this point. The education and the awareness that must go out regarding ICD-10, 5010, and all the regulations that work hand in hand is monumental. And I do not think that facilities, people, practices understand that this needs to be addressed now. If you haven't started addressing it, you're already late.
So already late. Jacqueline, you're in the training field. Does this fall to you that you need to train everybody so we can get ahead of, instead of being late?
Well, as an academician, yes. And listening to everyone speak, one of the things that was said that kind of resonates with me is that if you haven't begun the process, you are already late and kind of behind. And in education, one of the things that we're doing is that we have to train our faculty and staff on ICD-10. They have to understand how the HIPAA 5010 plays into this whole scenario, that without that, ICD-10 can't even be used in healthcare facilities. So what we do is to, one, prepare our students and educate them, and we're making a transition now, and we have, in education, have a transition timeline by our accrediting organizations that put in place steps that we need to have begun the process of. And we have already implemented a couple of those. One of the things is that with ICD-10, unlike 9, you can get away with a limited amount of the biological sciences area. But when you go to ICD-10, it is much more comprehensive. And you need a lot more of the anatomy and physiology, pure A&P. You need a lot more of the patho. So what we're doing in education is kind of looking at our curriculum and revising it to make sure that we're including all those elements that our students are going to need to be competent in the field as ICD-10 coders, to pass their certifying exam that's going to say that, yes, this is someone that you can use in the field to help you understand the coding systems. So we're kind of preparing for that now in academia. We're looking at our curriculum. As a matter of fact, we've already revised some of the courses that are there. One of the important things I feel is when you look at ICD-10 and you look at HIPAA and you look at the EHR and the Health Information Exchange, all of those things kind of work together. None of them are in a silo. So in education, when we teach those elements, we got to make sure that that is integrated across the curriculum. And that in itself can be challenging with dollars at a premium, as well as educating our staff in all of those areas.
Right. That's an interesting observation that in your response, the depth of information that now is reflected, that's really about the medical clinical condition. In talking to people, I hear that they think of the coding system more as an accounting or a billing function, and now it seems like it's shifting at least partially into more of a description of the actual medical diagnosis or the procedure in more depth. Is that right? Is that a good way to look at it?
I think it is a good way to look at it. One of the things that is happening within healthcare is traditionally, there's been sort of a separation of administrative information and processes from clinical information and processes. And really, the demands of healthcare reform and really getting the healthcare system to where we want it to be really requires integrating those two sets of information. And ICD-10 takes us a step there. The additional granularity and detail that it has really can help provide that data to make better decisions. Because if you really think about it, after a patient encounter, the patient is gone, and all we have is a data trail of what happened. And from that data trail, we've got to turn that into good information so that we can make good decisions about value-based purchasing to measure quality outcomes. And so ICD-10 is critical because it helps to bridge those two worlds of administrative and clinical, and it can really help support some of the broader things that we want to do in the industry.
Mm-hmm. And just to add to that, when you think about ICD-9, ICD-9 had about 14,000 diagnosis codes when ICD-10 has 68,000. So you're talking really about expanding the database and really getting down to details that ICD-9 just did not allow us to get to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the key concepts with the ICD-10 is the ability to get the refined data monitoring. Mm-hmm. Without that data, innovation cannot occur, healthcare reform cannot occur, advancements in medicine cannot occur. Data is imperative, not just to the facilities and to the payers, but it's also imperative to the patients. Because if providers leverage the ICD-10 coding the way it should be leveraged, they can actually monitor chronic care, they can monitor long-term care, they can monitor treatment outcomes, and compare cost versus modalities, and manage a patient better at a lower cost while looking at the data indicators provided by ICD-10. I think Jacqueline really hit it with saying that this is not a silo. ICD-10 is not just the October 1st, 2013 leap. It is a piece of the way healthcare reform is going with the value-based purchasing, pay for performance, monitoring these quality indicators, finding the way to provide the best patient care for the least amount of dollars and still allow the patient the education and decision making that they need, and to allow the physicians the medical necessity and documentation components of it without teaching the clinicians, and by clinicians I mean physicians as well, without teaching them the impact of ICD-10 and the documentation requirements, we cannot make that leap.
Well, it sounds like this is more than a billing system. This is, or a regulation. This is something that we should all be anxious to see happening, because it will improve healthcare, improve outcomes, and ability to tailor medical treatment better, right? So this is a good thing, right?
Well, absolutely. I think I said earlier before the panel began, I worked in hospitals for over 20 years. I am a clinician by history. I never linked my documentation to what that facility was paid. Never. Mm-hmm. And it is a completely different mentality coming over to this side and realizing how imperative the thorough, not the volume, but the quality of the documentation, how that must be in place.
Also from a patient perspective, and really remind everybody that this affects the healthcare industry, but it also goes outside of the healthcare industry. Medical records and diagnosis data is critical for disability determinations. And so there are companies and agencies outside of healthcare that get medical records, look at the diagnosis information, and make decisions about disability determinations and eligibility for those sorts of programs. And so this is really important for the healthcare system. It's important for practitioners, but it's also very, very important for the patient. This really impacts real lives, this information that we're talking about.
Well, I'm glad we included the patient in the equation. They sometimes are the one that's always left out in all these discussions about healthcare reform and systems and training and all of that. Let me shift gears a little bit here then. So we know ICD-10 is going to add more richness. It's got certain benefits. We'll come back to those benefits and opportunities. But we also, the title of this panel session is Risk or Opportunity. So we have to talk about the risk and of the challenge here. Sometimes people describe this and the deadline coming as actually a crisis. Maybe in September of 2013, they'll really be describing it as a crisis. And I want to share a quote that I really like. It was President Kennedy had, in a different crisis, observed that the Chinese character for the word crisis is made of two different components, two different brushstrokes. One is risk, and we always think about risk in terms of a crisis, but the other is opportunity. So there's always an opportunity in a big challenge or even in a crisis. But let's focus on the risks first. So what are the risks in this transition? We said that organizations don't seem to be as aware or ready, certainly, as we'd like them to be. Is the answer going to be the vendors? Marsha, you said you've got your own system, so you're your own vendor in a way.
In a way, but we're dependent on other vendors that we're interfacing to. Obviously, we bill just like other companies bill as well. So we are going to depend on other organizations being ready so that we have revenue coming in. It's not just, I think the complexity here is it's not just about us. It's about the whole system changing. And I think the additional complexity that we're still struggling to get everybody to understand is that there's going to be a dual coding system for a considerable amount of time after this goes into place. So, you know, the transition on October 1st, 2013 isn't just to all of a sudden change everything to ICD-10. It's any visit that date forward will be an ICD-10, but any visit before that date will be an ICD-9. And I think that's an additional complexity as well that we have to manage. And for us, with fee services and billing, et cetera, we're going to be dual coding for a considerable amount of time.
So that's a simple thing, right? I mean, you just need a little a map between ICD-9 and 10, the 14,000 to the 68,000 different codes.
Oh, I wish it was that easy. I really wish it was that easy. I think one of the mistakes that you know, not only providers, but even possibly payers are going to try to make is they're going to try to map these codes or crosswalk these codes. There are tools, GEMS is one of them, mm-hmm. that provides for a mapping system. However, that mapping system is to be used when all you are given is an ICD-9 code and you have to find a similar or comparable ICD-10. It's not to be used as crosswalking your diagnoses or crosswalking your documentation or for systems to crosswalk either. It is unreliable for that purpose. You can't base payment on those mapping crosswalks because the complexity of the codes in ICD-10 far outweighs the complexity in ICD-9. There are codes that never even existed. There are codes for new technology emerging through ICD-10. ICD-9 did not have that ability. They even changed the categories that many of the codes fell into and moved them to different categories of codes. There are combination codes in ICD-10 that did not exist in ICD-9. So to use a mapping system or a crosswalking system is going to set yourself and the payers up for failure and improper payment. Keeping two systems running is expensive, time-consuming, labor-intensive, and very difficult. One of the regulations that CMS just put out had to do with the timely filing limit for claims. They have now reduced their timely filing limit to 1 year, one calendar year. This is going to be an assistance when we're required to run two systems to process claims because they do go by dates of service. As Marcia said, it's not just October 1st, 2013, everybody switches to ICD-10. It's dates of service. So if you're holding claims for 6 months, those are still ICD-9 claims.
And I absolutely agree. You know, the biggest risk from a provider perspective is not getting paid. You know, not submitting a claim with ICD-10 can result in non-payment. And so some of the mistakes that can increase that risk, from my perspective, number one is waiting. There's a lot of confusion, as the panelists talked about, between this and other health IT initiatives. And everybody in this industry needs to treat all these regulations as a portfolio of health IT projects, treat it as a program so that everybody can be ready and to take full advantage of this opportunity. I think the second mistake is relying on the other guy. I've spoken at an ICD-10 vendor conference, and they said, we don't think providers are going to be ready. We talked to health plans, and they say providers aren't going to be ready. We talked to providers, and say the health plan's not going to be ready. Everybody's kind of pointing fingers and expecting either that somebody else is going to be the problem, not themselves, or that a vendor will take care of it. And that's a significant mistake that can increase the risk that can come along with 2013. And finally, I just want to agree with over-reliance on crosswalks. This change to ICD-10 is intended to be a fundamental shift in the way that we use information within the healthcare system to make better decisions and to improve the business process. And so when using these crosswalks, the way that you read in some of the media is dangerous because it really puts at risk losing some of the benefits. Doing it accurately is very difficult. And also, if you're a manager of an ICD-10 program and you ask for a lot of money from your executives, use this crosswalk strategy and then decide later that you want to really do a true upgrade, that's kind of tough. The ship has left. How are you going to go back and ask for more money when your executives thought that you've already taken care of the problem? And so those are some of the three mistakes I see with that can increase the risk associated with 2013.
Is budget a big issue? I mean, let's get real practical here in terms of risk. I mean, these are organizations that are worried about money at lots of different levels. They're dealing with lots of different issues at the same time. Is that a reason we think that there's a risk that there won't be a successful outcome in this transition?
I kind of agree with Todd and Sonia. One of the things that we look at in academia is that, as you say, there's going to be a dual system out there for quite some time. We are faced with the challenge of actually teaching students using two systems at the same time. ICD-9 is a difficult system to learn, not as intense and as difficult as ICD-10. So from the on the training end and the education end, we are faced with how do we integrate both of these systems. Both of them are very time-consuming, resource-intensive, training faculty, making sure that the faculty is trained, because if the faculty is not trained, they cannot in turn teach the students, and increasing the looking at the curriculum and the syllabi and figuring out what courses do we map this to and how do we increase the time without increasing the time when we can implement this. So I see the risk for academia is just waiting. We cannot wait, which we are not doing, and we need to make sure that we integrate the two, but it's just how do we juggle two systems at the same time, because you're going to have two group of students coming out. The students that are already in the program, part-time students who take their time going through the program, who may have taken some of these classes previously, but by the time they graduate, they're going to need a refresher. They're going to need some more information as far as ICD-10 is concerned, because they took ICD-9. So it's just like a double whammy, if you would say. We're starting one thing and we're moving on to the next, but we still have this group in the middle of students that we have to train, we have to backtrack, and we have to make sure that they are also proficient. So those are some of the challenges and risks that I feel in academia that we're faced with, making sure that all of the students come out. When they come out in 2012, they need to be able to know ICD-10. When they come out in 2013, absolutely. So, and then 2011, we have to teach two systems. In 2010, we're teaching two systems, but we're only giving them an introduction to ICD-10. In 2011, we've got to give them foundational information. We've got to begin to teach them how to code this. So for us, the risk is there if we do not train these students properly and if we do not integrate this into the system correctly, and working with industry to make sure that we're meeting their needs also, because I feel industry should be able to look to the academic community and say, okay, what do you have to offer and how can we partner to get some things done and to offer some courses that are comprehensive in nature and also meet the needs and the requirements of industry, of the healthcare industry.
And if I may, I agree with you 100%, Jacqueline. The budget piece of it, where the first thing that comes to everybody's mind is two systems. The IT piece of it is the first jump that everybody makes with the budget. But the IT piece of it is not the only piece of it. Now, I spoke with a gentleman at the ICD-10 summit in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago, and he was the IT director for about a 22-chain facility hospital group. They quit counting their programs at 300 for the number of programs that ICD-10 will impact. You take it outside of the IT piece, though, and you have what Marcia was referring to as the trickle-down effect. You have to train your clinicians. You have to have people able to do both systems. You have to have financial accounting and actuarial services that can accommodate to both systems and the way that you report your cost reports and your accounting. You also have to take into effect that this transition will drive many knowledgeable people away. There are people within facilities and physicians that I've spoken with, clinicians I have spoken with, that said, you know, I've done ICD-9 for almost 30 years. I'm done. I'm not going to make this transition. Mm-hmm. And that is understandable if you're to that point in your career that you can step back and be finished. But you have to understand, now you're in a position that you have to replace and retrain people to fill those voids.
Mm-hmm. You know, and with budget, budget is clearly going to be a big issue for each organization that has to implement ICD-10. And I think that really speaks to why it's so important to start now. Starting now presents the opportunity to take that capital investment and to spread it over a number of years. But when that's delayed, the number of options for implementation goes down, that cost really gets compressed into a shorter time frame and really makes it more difficult on organizations. So I think that's yet another reason why it's so important for everybody to start now if they haven't already.
And the budget impact is on two sides. So certainly it's costly to implement ICD-10, but if you don't, you're not going to have any revenue coming in. And so, you know, I think you have to consider that in your choices as well.
Absolutely. So now here's the psychological question. So what you just said is true. It's so logical. We need to start now or start yesterday. Any insights on to why that doesn't seem to be happening? Our survey, as I mentioned earlier, indicates that executives in this industry they're aware of one thing. They're aware that their industry isn't aware enough and motivated enough at this point. Is it human nature? Is it organizational dynamics? If we can understand that problem a little better, maybe we can start now, as Todd said. Any observations or thoughts on that?
Do we have an option for all of the above?
Certainly.
I think it is. All of yes. the above. I think the fear of ICD-10 is keeping a lot of people from beginning to address it, a lot of facilities from beginning those risk assessments, beginning those gap analysis, finding what ICD-10 is going to impact, like the gentleman I spoke to at the summit. When they hit 300, they were so overwhelmed that they just stepped back. You can't scale the mountain in one leap. You have to take it piece by piece. And in doing so, start now with your risk assessments. Find out where the gaps are and the pieces that ICD-10 are going to impact. Begin with the pieces that you can touch on now. Begin teaching your clinicians the documentation requirements, the basic differences between the systems. To assume that a vendor or to assume that a system programmer is going to handle the entire scope of these changes will set you up for not getting paid, as Marcia stated.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think another reason that's this has had difficulty really taking hold is that there has been a history within HIPAA of there being delays with prior implementations of HIPAA. But HHS has made it very clear. They issued a notice of proposed rulemaking and actually delayed this implementation date 2 years mm-hmm. beyond the original proposal. So this date is real. It's a final rule. However, I think with the history of other delays related to HIPAA, there may be some belief that that there's going to be another delay with ICD-10. And HHS has made it very clear that the date is the date, and they don't plan to change it. I think a second thing is that 2013 feels like a long time away, and it's really easy for human nature to kick in and say, I'll just worry about this later. But really, when you take that end date and start to back it up, you really will get to the point of, I'm late already. Because even if you take end-to-end testing, the testing between organizations to make sure that a provider can code an ICD-10 correctly, submit that to their health plan, and receive a response back, the level of testing between organizations with ICD-10 is really unprecedented in a lot of ways within the healthcare industry. And that's going to take, in my estimate, up to a year to really get that cross-organizational testing correct. And so that 2013 date really can get people off on the wrong track. Really, the real dates are the intermediate dates that require action now.
I think there are some organizations that are doing 50-10 first and saying, well, we'll deal with ICD-10 later. We're not choosing to do that. We're doing them simultaneously and independently, and I think that's an absolute critical success factor. I think if people wait until after 50-10, then they are really far behind the curve.
Just expand on that just for our audience just a little bit. Todd, you used an analogy the other day when we were chatting about the difference between 50-10 and ICD-10. For people not in this field, there may be a little bit of a jargon factor there.
Well, 50-10 and ICD-10 are two different but related things. And I think of 50-10 as the envelope, and ICD-10 as the content in that envelope. Mm-hmm. So 50-10 is a whole set of data standards. When a provider sends electronic information to a health plan, it specifies the format, the data elements, what position, what length, etc. Whereas ICD-10 arrives at a health plan via a 50-10 transaction, but it's actually the content. It actually has a structure for how to specify a diagnosis, how to specify a procedure. So both are absolutely critical because the current version of healthcare transactions cannot accommodate ICD-10. So 50-10 is a prerequisite to ICD-10, but like Marcia said, you can't do them both sequentially. It's got to be a simultaneous effort to make sure that each organization can meet both timelines.
So we've really talked a lot about risks. Let me just sort of close out this section of the discussion. What would you say stands out if you were to sort of single out what the greatest risk factor for organizations in terms of successfully completing this challenge? We've heard everything from workforce issues, integrated system issues, that it's not just one organization, but organizations need to be integrated with other ones. What stands out to each of you?
I think from my company's perspective, what stands out the most right now would be, for us, the systems issues. And secondly, the education piece, the fear that people, facilities, providers, payers, everybody, the whole gamut, the fear that this will continue to be pushed off to the back burner with the thought that CMS might delay the date. Well, CMS is not going to delay the date. There are too many other regulations within ARA and high tech that require timeframes to be met, and ICD timeframes are one of those to meet the rest of the regulations with healthcare reform. I think the fear, the inability to act now, for whatever reason it may be, is the biggest concern.
From my perspective, I see this as one of those perfect storms of the combination of people, process, and technology that really have to come together to make this happen. And it's got to happen within individual organizations and across organizations. You know, success for one organization isn't relevant. It's really the whole system being ready. And so to accomplish that, I really agree with Sonia that just the lack of attention really does concern me. I think there's just some confusion over the different regulations that exist and treating them each as silos. And I think it's a significant risk to think about high tech isolated from healthcare reform, isolated from ICD 10 and 5010. So I think just the need to treat it as a holistic set of efforts and to plan appropriately is absolutely critical.
And I guess I would tie on to what Todd was saying, in that I think it's just the sheer magnitude of how big this is and the number of simultaneous activities that are going to have to go on at exactly the same time to be prepared. So it's not just the IT systems. It's the organizational awareness. I think part of the reason that people aren't really they just don't know how big, they don't understand how big this is. They don't understand the impact it's going to have on everything that's done in these organizations, not just on the clinician and the HIM person or even the billing companies. It has a much broader impact throughout the organization, and I think that's what makes this, from my perspective, such a large effort.
From my perspective, it's education, education, education. Because if you don't educate individuals and you don't get the word out that there is training available and that there are resources available, and there are a lot of resources available through the American Health Information Management Association, there are resources available through CMS, there are a lot of resources available, a lot of information is out there. There are, I know that there is a big awareness within the health information management within the health information management area. So it's just making sure that people are educated and making sure that we're giving them quality education, and I think that's imperative.
Kind of the right education at the right time. The other complexity here is that when it comes to actually training people to use the ICD-10 mm-hmm. coding system, that has to be just in time. So yes. you can't start to train your clinicians and your HIM folks even 6 months in advance of the cutover. Mm-hmm. If they are not using it, they're not going to remember it. So is there going to be the volume of trainers available to do all that just-in-time training mm-hmm. as that date approaches? I mean, that to me is going to be a significant issue and risk.
And I feel that it's not, from being an ICD-10 trainer, it's not a 6 months out training. it is a real difficult process. If you've been coding from using ICD-9 for years and years and years to make that transition to ICD-10, because ICD-10 is so comprehensive in nature that what I have found is that some of the trainers had to go back and brush up on anatomy and physiology. So it is really an ongoing process. So I don't think it can wait 6 months out. I think it's something that's going to be ongoing and continuous. So as personnel and as staff and as students are learning ICD-9, they have to simultaneously keep 10 in the back of their mind and how it might apply. Now, a coursework might not be the best thing, but it does have some flexibility whereas from a teaching perspective, if I am dealing with neoplasms, I can easily take a student over to the neoplasm table in ICD-10 and say, okay, this is what it looks like in 10, although this is what it is in 9, and this is what you're using. So I believe it's a continuing process. I don't think you can wait 6 months out to try to train somebody, because the training is really intensive. And then once you get out there, you really need to start working with that ICD-10 and be coding it and looking at it. So even myself as an educator, I have to go back and reread and look at it again and learn these root diagnoses and how they all fit in together. So I look at it as an ongoing process, and that is quite challenging.
So we're talking about sort of a workforce issue. You're training, Jacqueline, people entering the workforce, but mm-hmm. it's also an in-place training.
Absolutely.
Certainly. And there must be a lot of practical challenges with that. These are busy people. They're delivering health care every day on tight schedules. Is there an insight into how that's going to happen? Is there a path forward that says we're going to be able to train the current workforce as well as the incoming workforce?
Well, what the American Health Information and Management Association has done is they have undertaken the ICD-10 training, train the trainer, and that's what it's called, train the trainer. Once you become a trainer, you can go out and then train somebody else after you to go through a series of steps. And what I see happening is that the educational community has to take a lead in making sure that they're able to provide what industry needs. The classes can be offered either through the traditional academic program or through a workforce development program, and both of those programs in the college offer these kind of modalities to teach people from. So it's something that we can offer weekends, evenings. We can even go to the location where the need is, so to speak. So that I feel this is just an issue that we can continually work towards and move on. But it's something that we are beginning now.
And if I could add to that, within National Government Services, we do have a multitude of certified professional coders, mm-hmm. and we have already begun our Train the Trainer sessions. Several mm-hmm. of us have completed the Train the Trainer sessions right. through the American Health Information Management Association, and we are now tasked with creating the modalities to treat our coders, and we're kind of embracing an engage, educate, and update philosophy of mm-hmm. get the attention, get the education done, and now we have to maintain updates throughout the next couple of years, because even though we're continuing with ICD-9 now, we will need the ICD-10 as it mm-hmm. rolls over. And that's one of the issues, is keeping the engagement for the next couple years and the updates going so that you don't lose that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to support that training point. We, in terms of it really needs to start now and be continuous, we're working with a client that is a health plan, a federal health plan. Part of their challenge is going through their coverage policy that says we're going to pay for these conditions as expressed by a certain set of ICD codes. And they need to actually fish through all of those coverage policies and say, right now they're expressed with this set of ICD-9 codes, and we're going to now express it with this set of ICD-10 codes. So doing that requires people right now who understand ICD-10. So there are two perspectives, training to support implementation activities, and then training to support actual coding when 2013 mm-hmm. arrives.
And as a government contractor with a multitude of local coverage determinations, I second that.
Well, we're going to kind of close out this somewhat gloomy risk portion of the discussion with just one question before we turn to the opportunity side and the benefit side once again. And that is there a precedent for this? Is there something we can look to in the industry that might give us some guidance and even some hope, perhaps? Y2K, the original HIPAA requirements. Is there something that we can hang on to as we leave the risk part of this?
I've heard that Y2K analogy a few times, and quite frankly, I think this effort dwarfs Y2K by an order of magnitude that's probably
that's not helpful,
lacks
Marcia.
Definition. Well, let's think about Y2K. Yes. One is that many IT systems, quite frankly, were prepared to handle four-digit years, well in advance, and they could be updated anytime well in advance of that. You could incrementally update your programs, et cetera. Was there some risk on that exact day? Potentially, but I don't think any of us really saw much. We didn't have to train our users on how to interpret a date. We didn't have to train them on how to enter a date. We didn't have to train them on what a date meant. Quite frankly, it's just very, very different. So was there a single date when this transition happened? In essence, yes, but yet we had years to prepare for it. We could change those dates one at a time all throughout our system. We're in a very different place with this coding system, where the only testing that you can do in advance of October 1st, 2013 is in a simulated environment. You cannot do it in a production environment. I wish that there was a way to implement ICD-10 incrementally and map in the background to ICD-9. We'd all be doing it. Mm-hmm. But there isn't. So I don't think there's any comparison.
So in Y2K, I didn't choose to go build a bunker and provision it for 6 months so I could survive. So you're saying maybe I need to do that in terms of ICD-10.
I
would like to point out, with Y2K, what happened when the clock struck 1201? What happened? It was very anticlimactic, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay, the personal optimist in me hopes that's because everybody was prepared and they took the steps that they needed to take to make sure the transition went smoothly. Back to this topic with ICD-10, being prepared will put you in the best possible position on October 1st, 2013.
Mm-hmm. I think the closest analogy I can think of in the healthcare industry was the implementation of NPI, the National Provider Identifier. Prior to this requirement, every health plan in the country had its own numbering system for what they how they identified providers. So the NPI requirement required everybody to get enumerated to have and use one standard NPI number when submitting claims and claim status transactions. And so this, at the time, was really pretty novel in the industry because it was the first time there was a simultaneous update to the actual content of what was going back and forth, not just the structure. And to be honest with you, it was a little bit tough to implement NPI. One of the things that did happen in NPI that I think is applicable here is that the government and the private sector worked together and had testing days. They said on this day, everybody is going to send test information back and forth with these NPIs, and we're going to prove to ourselves that every component within the system is ready. So I think there are some lessons learned there that we should all take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we said that the other part of the equation that balances risk, we hope it balances risk, is the opportunity. And we've alluded to that a little bit in terms of why a new coding system and what that means to the patient. Let's just talk sort of strategically for organizations for a moment. What does it mean to them to be able to implement this? What would it strategically mean to a healthcare provider organization, to a payer organization, to be able to get past that 2013 transition in an environment when we now are implementing ICD-10 and all that goes along with that? Is there something that we can say that sort of gives a strategic imperative to this? Or is it just a regulatory requirement? Is it just something you have to do? And that's the way organizations sort of feel about it.
Well, I think ICD-10 is offering this country a new national health strategy ability with the use of the data monitoring that the specificity of these codes provide. We've alluded to the complexity of ICD-10 coding. However, the data that will come out of ICD-10 will allow more accurate care pathways to be developed. It will allow comparable comparisons between countries with data monitoring and health conditions, even tracking epidemics, getting to the extent of that. It will offer the patient a better expenditure of their healthcare dollars as well, because as the care pathways are refined and the management, the health management that's going to go along based on this data, as this occurs, the dollars are going to be spent much more wisely. And it will also, as far as a regulatory piece, it's going to cut down on the potential for abuse and fraud.
Mm-hmm. When I think about the opportunities, I always remind myself just of the power of information. And information can be a competitive advantage for any organization. So to take a couple of examples, if you think about national security, all this talk about connecting the dots, that's about data and information. And taking it from multiple sources, multiple organizations, and putting it together in a way to have a benefit. If you want to take it into the private sector, you think about airlines. You know, part of their competitive advantage is managing their route schedule. And what they need for that is they need good data and to turn that into information to make good business decisions. And I think we have this same opportunity in healthcare. Like I said earlier, after the patient is finished, they're gone, and all we have is a trail of data. And our challenge is to take that data turn it into information so we can make good coverage decisions from a payer perspective, so that providers can manage that patient better, can intervene and achieve better health outcomes. So we have to remember that even though it might look like just data, data can turn into a competitive advantage.
So William Farr in the 1800s was as right then as I think you are today, Todd, in terms of the value of the information. That's why he was so frustrated with the coding system that was there in the 1700s with all sorts of diseases that we know don't even exist nowadays, probably. I want to ask one more question related to sort of opportunity and strategies moving forward. Todd, you alluded to testing earlier, and I think it's been mentioned several times. That's a very practical system question. This won't work if there isn't an ability to test the systems and how they interrelate. Marsha or Todd, is there something that we're missing here that's going to happen with testing, or is that an issue that we really haven't confronted yet in the conversion?
I think I think the biggest concern is the integration testing. Is everybody going to be prepared to exchange data, et cetera, between organizations? But for VA internally, testing is going to be a huge issue. We have over 100 integrated software applications, over 50 of which are going to be impacted by this. We have over 150 hospitals run a combination of 129 different production systems. So we can handle the national, we can simulate a test environment, but that's what we're going to do, we have to do. You can't test this in production. So we have to simulate a test environment, bring all the changes together, and we're quite confident in our ability to do that for the national programs. We're more concerned about the fact that maybe one of those 150 hospitals went out and purchased a commercial product maybe we're not aware of, or we're not aware of until the last minute. How do we integrate all of that testing together?
You know, and I think with ICD-10 testing, we're going to get a little preview of it with 5010. If you actually read the 5010 final rule from CMS, they describe level 1 compliance and level 2 compliance. So level 1 compliance is testing within an organization's four walls. Then level 2, it explicitly says testing with your trading partners outside of your four walls. So we're going to get a preview of this with 5010, and hopefully that will go well. And we're going to have to carry those lessons learned over into ICD-10.
Well, what I'd like to, we have just a few minutes left. I'd like to sort of end this with some advice. This is an expert panel. I think we've had a really informative discussion and exchange, certainly based on the surveys that we've done that say, you know, people are hungry for knowledge and information around this issue, and the data's getting late. I'd like each of you to comment based on your perspective. What advice would you give to your colleagues in this field who are either confronting this issue now or maybe need to be confronting it and dealing with it? What's your best advice in terms of how to get started? Is there a way to think about the problem? Is there a way to get organized? Is there a way to set priorities and start moving on implementation? Anybody have some thoughts to get us started?
Embrace the challenge. I know that sounds very huge, but take it for the opportunities that it provides. Begin now. There are timelines available on CMS's website, AHIMA, the American Health Information Management Association, even the American Academy of Professional Coders. They all have generalized timelines of where you should begin, what you should be doing at each stage, and how to incorporate that within your practice, within your facility, within your company. And communicate with every level within your practices and your facilities, because as soon as you assume that somebody is not impacted by ICD-10, you'll find out when it's too late that they are. So communicate, make sure everybody understands the importance of acting now and acting in a planned, progressive way to implement these changes.
I would echo that. I think that, you know, we're undergoing a big awareness campaign. because, you know, our executive leadership needs to understand, obviously our coders need to understand, our clinicians need to understand, but all those folks that run databases that are doing analytic analysis of the data that's coming in. We have our clinical reminders. We have our education of our software developers in how are they going to make the migration. I think that awareness is going to continue, and the sooner they know what's coming, and quite frankly, that they get nervous about it, the better off. Because if they're not nervous, I don't think they truly understand the magnitude of the problem. And so getting out and making sure everybody's aware and using that as an a bi-directional exchange of information. What do you from your central leadership position not understand that might impact their area? So I think those types of that type of awareness campaign needs to start yesterday.
To embrace the change, be nervous. What else would you give as advice?
I would say prepare from an educator's standpoint is just making sure that for educators that they are following the timeline that the American Health Information Management Association put out there, making sure that they're integrating things into the curriculum, make sure that they're working with their advisory boards in the healthcare community to make sure that they understand and know the offerings that we have to offer.
And of course, I agree with all the panelists, and I think the two things I want to emphasize is, first of all, doing a really complete impact assessment. Working with our client, even they were surprised how much they use diagnosis and procedure, because this information is so embedded within operations and policies and systems. Sometimes people who've been at an organization their whole career can really forget how pervasive this information is. So starting with a really complete impact assessment, having an inventory of where this information is used is the absolute critical first step. And then the second thing that I suggest for anyone, any organization, is to make sure you're looking at ICD-10 in context. I think every organization needs a health IT portfolio and a strategy to make sure they're addressing 5010 and ICD-10, all the things we've talked about, because it's really a lot. And so by looking at it as a portfolio, there's an opportunity to leverage resources more efficiently, and there's really an opportunity to take care of each requirement and do it in a way that achieves compliance and strategic benefits.
Well, that's really leaving me and hopefully some of the audience that's listening in with a little glimmer of hope, because having an inventory, looking at it in context, being able to look at future impacts, those sound like things that people and organizations know how to do. So this is not necessarily this insurmountable challenge, it sounds like it's just about embracing the change, getting ready, and doing some of those very practical things. I can say that I'm starting to feel a little more optimistic. Is that maybe is foolhardy, but given everything else we said in this panel. But I want to thank each of the panelists that we've had this morning. I think they've given us tremendous insight and a lot of knowledge on the subject. And as we said at the outset, that's the starting point for so much of this industry, is to gain that knowledge and insight and awareness, and maybe a few practical tips on what to do across the board, from technology to workforce to strategy and just to the nuts and bolts of implementation. So our time is just about up. Again, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Noblis Insights Panel ICD-10, Risk or Opportunity, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show was produced at the Noblis Innovation and Collaboration Center in Falls Church. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to it in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com. And if you'd like more information about how to get ready for ICD-10, please go to noblis.org/ICD-10.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics and your source for federal news now.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or